Hello and welcome to another EV Cafe Takeaway podcast. The podcast focused on the zero emission future that we all hope for. So every week I get joined by one of the wonderful members of the EV Cafe team. And today, the lovely John Curtis. Welcome,
hello,
John.
Hello, sweeties. How are you? Are you well?
It's always slightly Dame Edna when John says that, isn't it? But there we go.
Hello, my little darlings.
Excellent. Well, great. But this week, we are, as always, joined by one of the wonderful innovators, pioneers, and collaborators of our industry. And this week is no exception. We have the lovely Charlie Gilbert. Charlie, welcome to you.
Good morning. Thanks very much for having me, guys.
Hey, listen, it's our pleasure. And look, just to get right into it, I know, Charlie, you work for Field Dynamics, and it has a particularly resonant place in my heart because, of course, of all the work that you guys do around knowing where vans are at night. I mean, that just doesn't get any better than that. It's just too exciting. But, in fact, before we get going, because we're not going to go down too much of a route of Field Dynamics today. So, but we do know that they have played a tremendous part in why you're here. But tell us a little bit about Field Dynamics first, and then we'll go on to why you're here.
Okay, sure. So Field Dynamics is a net zero analytics consultancy. The business has actually been going quite a number of years. We've been in net zero for about the last 7 years. But it's called Field Dynamics because we used to do a lot of work optimizing field operations and field teams, and we still do a little bit of that. But no, focus very much is around electrification of transport and decarbonization of heat. So yeah, lots of different clients in doing really interesting, innovative projects, and it's great to be a part of the journey with them.
And a fantastic thing that they do, and of course is why we meet a lot of the people that we meet that are here, you know, that net zero journey, that commonality of heart. But I think we've got something else in common, of course, because we stumbled across each other in a very, well, I was about to make a real faux pas. John asked me a question, and he said, do you know Charlie? Or can I introduce you to Charlie? And I had the cat from an advert, you know, the one that sort of talks funny from
Charlie
years ago.
That's
it, exactly. And I was about to go, oh, Charlie the cat. And I looked at John, and John had a slightly serious look in his eye, which is not common for John. John is usually all about the mischief, and it wasn't there. And I said, is this serious? And he went, yeah. And I went, okay. So, Charlie, what was that conversation about?
So, yeah, it was it was a really good initial conversation. And I have been looking for a medium and an audience to talk about an experience that I had at the beginning of the year, which was I was actually off work for almost 4 months, and I had a very severe episode of major depression. I think from my perspective, I really want to, now I'm out the other side of it, and I've gone on a real journey about learning about myself, but also I really want to help people. I found it an absolutely terrifying experience. I'm here because I got great support from lots of different parts of my life, and professional support as well, family, friends of friends, the list goes on, colleagues. Everybody was fantastic in supporting me. And I think, you know, that's why I was able to come back really feeling incredibly well, and back at work full time, really enjoying everything at work and all the great projects we're doing. So I really wanted to use this opportunity, and I thank you very much for allowing me to do that, to share that experience in a bit more detail, because I think a lot of people, there's a lot of talk about mental health, and that's really, really positive. And I think there's a lot of talk about high performance and, you know, 5 a.m. club and all these sorts of things which drive you. And I'm a very driven person. It was all very much self-inflicted on myself in terms of what I went through. So, I'd really like to talk about that in a bit more detail and show that, you know, there shouldn't be any stigma about talking about it. I want to help people who've fallen into the same trap. One of the things I found by talking about it and with people is just how frighteningly common it is. When I've opened up, people have gone, well, actually, yeah, I had something similar, but they didn't really want to kind of talk in more detail. Or it might be their wife or their partner or their father. So I think it's just very, very common out there. And I don't think people talk enough about it. So that's why I wanted to podcast.
Charlie, you're incredibly kind because you came up to me at that event, and that was very brave in itself. And you said you started to talk to me about mental health, and you said you'd listened to the podcast that I'd done, and
yes,
where I talked about my problems. And I know Paul has spoken about his as well. And it just gives you that sense of thank goodness that, one, I'm not alone, but also, two, the experience I've been through is helping other people to be a little more able to tell their own story, which is exactly what we need from you today. So depression is hugely misunderstood. Mm. What does it mean for you when you say you have depression?
So when I had very severe depression, I had a range of symptoms. I had a feeling of dislocation from the present state. I didn't really feel like I was in the room. I had a feeling of being just completely and utterly overwhelmed by even the smallest things. I had intrusive thoughts. I had some very, you know, disturbing thoughts that were coming into my mind. I suffered terribly with insomnia, chronic insomnia. I just could not sleep at all. And we all know when we're well, if we get a crap night's sleep, how awful we feel the following day and how we don't function. I was probably like that for three or four months before I fell over. And I thought my problem was sleep, actually. I thought, well, maybe I'm just not sleeping properly. And the worst thing that I think you can also do when you're not very well is start Googling what's wrong with you. And I'll talk about that a little bit later on. But I sort of wanted to think, well, how can I improve my sleep? So I did some research and I found an insomnia CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy course. Signed up for it, went on it and started that. But of course, before all of these sorts of surveys, they ask you a whole bunch of questions to see whether you're suitable to enroll in the course. And they asked a lot of the questions, which I now know are the depression and anxiety questions. And I basically gamed the system and it said, you can't do this course because you're chronically depressed. I went back, rigged all the questions, and I was like, hey, I can do a sleep course. That's great. And funny enough, it didn't work very well and made things worse. There was that. There was extreme health anxiety it led to as well. I had a horrendous episode of that. I had chronic brain fog. I just couldn't think straight at all. I found doing tasks really hard. My short-term memory was horrendous. I lost a huge amount of weight. As you can see, I ride bikes quite a lot. I think I'm now 10 kilograms heavier than when I was poorly. Significant. And I have Crohn's disease as well. So I also had really, really terrible problems with my stomach and that sort of things as well. So it was just this mass of different symptoms and things coming on, which made me feel terrified. And the thing that really started to scare me to death was I was taking the dog for a walk, and it was a winter's day, and I looked up at a branch and a thought came into my head and said, oh, you can hang yourself from that branch. And I was literally like, where did that where did that come from? And I was, I then started to have lots of those sorts of, and so the concept of sort of suicidal ideation came in, and I was just absolutely terrified. I didn't want to tell anyone about it because I thought I was going to get, you know, taken away and never see anybody again and all that sort of stuff. So I was really, really scared.
Do you know what, Charlie, I think I want to take just a step back for a moment because I think one of the things that you talk about here is that you know, anybody can get this. And when we met you, Charlie, and even looking at you on screen today with your bike behind you, you know, a nice family setting, it all yep. looks really positive. And when we met you, you were the personification of a business professional, oozing confidence, you know, dealing with sort of technical issues, bringing those to life for customers. And you mentioned, as we've been talking, you know, that success, that sort of drive for success, that inner kind of doing, and that yes, man, I can really relate to that, you know, and sometimes just saying yes gets you into a right old pickle.
Talk us
through that process up to that stage, you know, just give us a bit of that background, because you know, you're quite an awesome individual to meet in that personal kind of space, and you, the two don't necessarily add.
It's a good point, and I think I am a yes man. I will say yes to absolutely everything. So there's only then so many plates you can start to juggle at home and at work. And I think I just got to the stage where I was running around and I thought I was going to be okay. I'll just get to the weekend. I'll just get to Christmas and then it will be all right. But of course, it's never all right because you're looking at it. And I was... I really took it on myself and put a huge burden on myself. And because I'm proud and I come from a very successful family, my father is very successful, my brother's successful, I was like, well, I can't fail. I would say, you know, I've got a problem here. I'm just going to keep going. And the reason why I'll keep going is because I've had this mentality is, well, healthy body is surely healthy mind. So I was working, finishing work, and then I was jumping on my turbo trainer and I was blasting it. I was doing 200 miles a week on turbo trainer. I tipped so much sweat over it, it rotted. My bike. Metal components just completely disintegrated. But of course, that didn't help the situation because I then had a whole load of cortisol around my brain and trying to then go straight to bed. And you look at all the you do start to when you're well, going, what a stupid thing to do. I was absolutely exhausted physically and mentally. So what am I going to do? I'm going to exhaust myself some more. That's a really good strategy.
But it's really difficult, isn't it? Because the advice is that exercise is good for you.
Yeah.
So, and our mentality sometimes is that we do things to extreme.
Yes.
So you are somebody who's high functioning, high performing, doesn't want to fail, always pushes yourself harder than probably anybody else would push you.
Yeah.
And that leads you down a road where inevitably something is going to give. Either physically your body will break down or mentally you will break down. And it's not surprising. We were talking to an athlete yesterday who went through a very similar kind of process in that he was driven to win. There was nothing else and he was driven to succeed. And when that stopped, it's actually a bit of a wake-up call and it makes you really step back. And if there's any chink in your armor, that's going to be a real battle. And clearly it was for you.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah. And I'm also a bit of a workaholic. I love my job. I love what we do. I love maps. I love data. I love the net zero ecosystem. So I just enjoy working as well, and I want to kind of do the best. So I was, you know, getting up at stupid o'clock in the morning and trying to do things when I hadn't had any sleep. And you clearly, if you've not slept for days, you're not particularly productive either. Funny enough, so it was this kind of storm of things coming together, and it was actually one of my colleagues, finance director, who said, maybe you'd like to go and like spit somebody. And I was like, yeah, maybe I would. So I then sort of did a bit of counselling, which with a fantastic service through Field Dynamics. And I spoke to this lovely guy. He was brilliant. I had an hour with him for a week, for 3 weeks. And I was like, right, fixed. Let's rock and roll, ready to go. and then it sort of started to get really, really quite serious, and I fell over and stopped working, and I had fantastic support from Ben and Laura, who I'm sitting with me on the management team at Field Dynamics. They were phenomenal. Ben was phoning people up, friends, working out who I could go and see, because you're so knackered and you just can't make a decision. And it was the first time that anything like this had experience for my wife, so she was absolutely terrified. The kids were starting to go, what's going on? So you do have. I was very fortunate. I had lots of people to call on, and I think a lot of people don't have that.
But even in light of that, though, Charlie, you seem to be trying to push on. Why do you think we, as the human race, seem to hide all this stuff away? Because we do, don't we? I mean, I got to 42-ish, and I'd had counselling. Childhood wasn't great, and all that kind of stuff. And so you fast forward, and I get to 42, and divorce, were made redundant, all of the things that you've talked about, and then you're plunged into some CBT counselling and other bits and pieces that really. Yep. Ultimately helped over a very long period of time.
Yeah, yeah.
But we want to, don't we? We want to put on the nice shirt, stick on the tie, and polish up and just lovely. Why is that, do we think?
I think for me, it's coming back to probably, my childhood and, experiencing the success that my father had and trying to emanate that. I think it's different for different people. It's probably the answer to that question, Paul.
But is it society as a whole, though, possibly that we're not?
I think it is, and I think what we see in the media, what we watch on social media, I think it's that just pace. There's never any downtime, and Where I guess the starting point for me before I started even sleeping poorly, I just couldn't switch off. And this kind of concept of just being permanently switched on is, I think there's a kind of competitive element to it. But I don't really see that. And I was more of a comparative element in saying, I'm trying to be like the person that's my idol and my role model, and I want to be as good as that. And my dad was very successful, and he's got a CBE, and he's done some fantastic stuff. But I just got to that threshold where I sort of then realized, well, maybe I'm not going to get there, and then. If I'm not going to get there, I'm going to push harder and harder and harder and harder.
What's really interesting, and you mentioned it. Sorry, Charlie, you mentioned that you are somebody who found insomnia a real issue.
Yeah,
and I had depression for I will always have depression, but my go-to is that I can sleep for 18 hours. No problem at all every day and did do for nearly 2 years. And I think the point of that is that we all experience our depression differently. Mm. It's unique to you almost, isn't it?
Yes.
And Paul, you've had a similar challenge in your life. Yours will be very different to mine. And it does make it very difficult for the health professionals to give us the right support. I found 2 weeks ago that I have comorbidities. So I not only suffer from depression, but I have ADHD and I have autism, which I didn't know. I had no idea. And that explains so much of my life. It's hugely complex. And so to get society to understand that it's okay to be you is incredibly difficult, because even between the three of us, we have different understandings of what depression is.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think when I went down to seek medical help initially, it's hard. It's incredibly hard for GPs. I mean, GPs have a woeful time anyway with everything that's going on. And I was just in a state where I actually did have some previous relationship with my GP, so he knew who I was. So when I wandered in and I was in the state that I was, he was a bit shocked. But I got the sort of, well, have a week off, have a couple of week off, you know, couple of weeks off, you know, see how you feel. And it was actually my sister-in-law's mother, who was a consultant psychiatrist and ran a practice at Harley Street for years and years and years. She's well into her late 70s now. But she sat down with me for sort of 20, 30 minutes ago. Right, okay, you're coming with me, and we're going to see the doctor together. So that was hugely beneficial and lucky for me. And then I got sort of into a state where I could start to have some medication. And that was a kind of bizarre experience and very alien to me, because I keep myself physically fit. I don't really have any time off work ever for being sort of poorly and sick and anything. So someone was then giving me some tablets, and I was like, well, I don't want to take those. I don't need those. And
did you take them?
Yeah. Well, I did. So the first bit of medication that I was prescribed was mirtazapine, which is actually an antidepressant SSRI, but it's also supposed to be good for insomnia. So I took that for about a week, and I was feeling absolutely horrendous. And I now know that you J-curve when you take antidepressants, and you feel a lot worse anyway. So, but I started to feel very, very peculiar. I was almost having, you know, out of body experiences. So I was like, oh no, this is not what I want to be doing. And then I went to see my sister-in-law's mother, and she said, oh no, you don't want that. You shouldn't be on that. You should be on this. So I'm then like, oh, what should I do? Mm-hmm. So, but it wasn't really until I went to see a psychiatrist. And I think the thing that's really inspired me to talk about this is when I went into the GPs the second time, I was told that it would be 6 months to see a consultant psychiatrist on the NHS. 6 months. And I was borderline in crisis by that point. He was embarrassed. But there's nothing that the GPs can do. So, you know, it's wrong. And I got help quickly because I could afford to pay for it. And for a really good guy. But lots and lots and lots of people don't get that opportunity. They can't afford to, so they're stuck. And that's horrendous. That really is horrendous.
And Was it the sort of visit, the talking to, and the engaging with the psychiatrist that was the turning point for you? Was that's truly kind of opening up and having some professional help? That was that point?
Yeah, I think there's a sort of recognition that, okay, I've got depression, and there's now multiple people that are telling you that you've got depression, so you've got depression. And then it's going, okay, well, there's a recognition that, and actually it's quite a relief, because I was now told that I had something, which was great, but it was also really bad because I then went, right, I love research and, you know, looking at things. I was like, straight on this, and right, depression, what do you do to sort out, so how do you make yourself better, all these sorts of things. And yeah, and within, I went to see a psychiatrist, I got prescribed loads of drugs for sleep, so that was good. Five or six different medications to make me sleep, which was meant that I could actually sleep and function, and that was probably the turning point, Paul, but right, in terms of when I went. But then, because I was Googling everything, all of a sudden I'd realised why I had depression, and that was because I was about to die of cancer in 3 days. And I went through this horrendous health anxiety episode, and I was still really, really poorly because all the medication hadn't really kicked in yet. And it takes, it probably took 10 weeks before I felt any better. Wow. Once I first started taking everything. My brother came up, and it was the Six Nations, and we were watching a rugby match, and I wasn't watching the rugby match. I was Googling symptoms, and I'd gone, oh, right, okay, well, because I've got Crohn's disease, I haven't been checked up for that, but that's the reason why my stomach's wrecked, and my brain isn't working properly because, yeah, I've got cancer and I'm about to die. And I convinced myself, and at that point, it got, you know, very, very serious, and I almost had to go in as an inpatient into hospital.
Was that the sort of worst stage, really?
That was the worst stage, yeah. Yeah, and then I was starting to have, yeah, weird synapse mismatches on what I was thinking, yeah, more intrusive thoughts, yeah, weird stuff going on, yeah. And it was scared.
Charlie, may I ask about your family and how they coped during this time? Because they're seeing a different you.
Yeah.
That must have been incredibly difficult for them. They were obviously supportive, but what have they learned about you, do you think, during this time? And has it been, do you think it's been a positive thing that you've been through this with them?
Yeah, it's been hugely positive. And I think for my wife, she was really in firefighting mode the whole time and didn't have time to decompress. So she's now very happy that I am now well and I'm in control of everything and it's been good. But I was off work for 4 minutes, so I actually got to spend quite a lot of time with my family as well. Mm. And it was challenging. I've got two daughters, and we kind of shielded some of the things that were going on from them, but they can pick it up, they can sense it, of course they can. And they were incredibly brave and supportive as well, even as little scamps. They were just fantastic. I think from my wife, now we're out the other side of it, she's learned to spot some of the traits that I had to ensure that I don't get into where I got to. Because left to my own devices, I'd be working 24/7, and I would drift back into it. And now I just have to kind of put a guillotine down when I say, right, okay, I now need to switch off.
So you correlate your working very, very hard,
yes,
with your depression.
Yes. That's
pushing yourself to be the very best you can be all, yes, the time, and being so driven caused you to not be able to function correctly, and you crashed. So by working that through, the logic is if you step back and, mm-hmm, work less feverishly but more,
yes,
quality,
yes,
you're able to work that through in your mind and say, I can still deliver,
yep,
great things, but it's not going to take over my life. Is that broadly it?
Yeah, exactly. And now it can change from, you know, work, ride bike, go to sleep, repeat. Now I'm doing all sorts of fantastic things that I never thought that I'd get into. There's a local community hub just down the road, and it's purpose was designed to sort of set up and support elderly people, and so they could have conversations and participate in the local community. And I'm volunteering at the local shop. I am badged as the technical person, so I now go around in the evenings and help people with their laptops. it's a fantastic thing. I'm cooking. I'm sketching. I'm drawing. I used to love drawing as a kid, and I used to draw maps, treasure maps, and that's kind of, I guess, how I got into geography and GIS and mapping and what we do at Field Dynamics. And, you know, I'm now sort of doing that. I've been asked to draw the label for a gin bottle that's going to be sold at the local school.
Good, excellent. That's my Christmas present right there.
So it's open up, and now everything is much more balanced. And, you know, I still like riding my bike, but I only do it a couple of times a week. I go to yoga. It's phenomenal. If someone had said to me 2 years ago, oh, in 2 years' time, you're going to be doing yoga twice a week and meditating once a day, every day, I'd be like, yeah, of course I will. You know, what a load of rubbish. Whereas now they are fantastic elements to me for just to quieten down my mind so that, I can switch off.
I don't know, challenge a little thought there. John kind of painted a picture there of it's the work, that working 24/7 that kind of got you to where you ended up. We've touched on it a little bit. We touched on a little bit of your childhood. We touched on that comparison, and I'll just keep it to that word. Comparison around dad, brother, others around you. As we go deeper into our lives, we find that it's not so much the symptoms, the outworking of it, but it's this core belief that we've got to be better, and that's why we work. Is comparison the why that you worked so hard, and is that thing that drove you to the edge of the abyss and into the abyss?
I think that's one of the main areas. I'm just an incredibly motivated person, and I get engrossed in things. So I think for me, it is that comparison piece, and I do think coming back to it, it is an individual view. I really do believe that. Now I'm okay with you know, I've got a great life. I've, you know, got a wonderful wife, got kids, got a great job. And, you know, only one person when I've opened up has said to me, you know, we're depressed. What have you got to be depressed about? But I think, you know, it's making sure that you've got that balance. So that it was for me that comparative view and trying to emulate and kind of getting that.
It's funny because we do it all the time, don't we, John? We're constantly comparing. I think John does, maybe. He's so damn good at everything that he's the person I often compare myself with. And I'm like, I'm not good enough many times. And as I look out across the industry, and that we have some amazing people, but we really do have to step back and say, I'm not the same. I'm me. Yeah. And that is sometimes the hardest thing to do, isn't it? Just to say, I'm me. This is my place. This is what I have. And this is how I fit.
And content with that.
Being content is such a key thing, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's hard. Yeah. It's hard.
It's brutal. What does the future look like, Charlie? So you're in a period of relative stability, and you've clearly filled your time with different things. So you've gone from focusing on work to lots of different bits of a jigsaw which make up your life.
Yes.
Do you see that there is any room for further development, or will you just keep running at 100 miles an hour with lots of different stuff rather than that one thing, which was Field Dynamics?
I think for me, it's having the balance. now, and health is more important than absolutely anything. Without your health, you're nothing. You haven't got anything. So for me, I'd like to, you know, get involved more in the community work that I'm doing. I'd like to, you know, do more drawing. I'd still like to do a sportive every now and again on the bike. And yeah, I'm excited to be part of Field Dynamics and helping the business to grow and expand. So that's a very rounded answer, and I guess Paul, you're going to chip in here. But
I am. I was just going to ask, haven't you just given yourself a lot more people to say yes to?
That's a very good question. But I am conscious of the yes bit now, and I think that's and learning to say no, because I had it with the community work that I was doing. So I volunteered in the shop. Someone heard that I might know my way around a laptop. So all of a sudden, I'm done the email migration, and I've fixed, you know, X's machine, and so you do have to kind of contain it. And the way I now look at it is, you only have so much time. You can't cram everything in, so you've got to box it off into chunks. And now when I look at it, and I'm a very visual person, I'm going, right, okay, that's what I'm going to do with work. That's where I'm going to do some next time. That's where I'm going to spend some time with family. That's where I'm going to go and watch my daughter play netball. That's where I'm going to take my daughter's art. So it's actually having that plan is really useful for me, because I didn't have it before. I just tried to do everything all at the same time. And having the focus time, focusing on one thing rather than trying to do 100 things at the same time.
Yeah.
So, Charlie, one of the things you said right at the beginning was that you were telling your story as a way of giving people a platform, I guess, to identify and to look at their own lives. What advice from all of your learning could you give to somebody who's sitting at home or in their car listening to this, who's thinking, that's me, or that's not me, but I recognize a lot of that? What would you say to them?
Talk about it. Talk about it to as many people as you can. And the reason why I say that is, I said I've only had one person who's sort of gone, phew. Everyone that I've spoken to has said, okay, you should go and do this, or I could speak to somebody who might be able to talk to you, or talk. You have to talk. And if you don't, you just bottle it up. You start thinking about it, your mind starts going, and that's where it starts to spiral. So I would say, just talk.
Okay. And you've talked now.
Yeah.
And I wonder, how do you feel?
I feel fantastic. I feel very grateful to have this platform. So thank you again, guys. It's been really good to talk about it. I feel like I hope that kind of some of the things that I've said people can relate to, and the experience is terrifying. You don't get better overnight. It's not like you wake up with a cracking hangover, pop a couple of paracetamol, and you're better again. It takes time. But if you look after yourself and you take some time for yourself, then you won't. You're far less likely to get into the situation that I got. I didn't take any time for me. And I won't say me, I was doing all the things for me, but I didn't step back and just go, right, actually check in with yourself. How are you feeling? And, you know, if I truly asked myself at the beginning of how I was feeling, I'm just, exhausted. Okay, well, if you're exhausted, you need to do something about that.
Mm.
If there's one thing I may say, just as I finish, something's just flashed into my mind, a statistic I saw this week that said that the biggest killer of men under 50 is suicide.
Yes.
That is why you matter. That is why today matters. And that is why the messages that we put out, you put out, and our community puts out are vital. We have to talk about this. You said, you know, I'm frightened, I've got cancer. Cancer's the least of your problems, my friend, when the biggest killer of under 50s is suicide.
Yep.
And it's funny, we almost accept physical shortcomings, heart attack. We accept that that's could happen. Cancer could happen to anybody. believe us, depression can happen to anybody.
Yeah.
And as Charlie rightly says, talk to somebody, please.
Yeah. Charlie, in the background of what we've talked about, I know that you've kind of alluded to the idea that your depression was self-inflicted.
Mm.
And I think that I love the film Good Will Hunting. Do you remember this film?
Yeah.
One of the best films that I can immerse myself in that film. But one bit that stands out to me was Robin Williams talking to Matt Damon. I forget the character names. And he looked at it and he had all his file and he put the file down and he said, "It's not your fault." And he said, yeah, I know. He said, "It's not your fault. It's not your fault."
Yeah.
"It's not your fault."
Yeah.
We are wired the way we are wired. And in the same way we talked about illness, like getting cancer and doing all this kind of stuff, it's not your fault.
Yeah.
I'm finding that incredibly difficult, Paul. Sorry.
I know, but it isn't. It isn't. It isn't. It isn't your fault, John.
Sorry, Charlie. It's about you. Sorry.
But this is it. You know what? The hardest thing for us to hear is it's not our fault. Now, I've done some heinous things in my life that I consider heinous. Things that, you know, we look out and we go, yeah, but I did that.
Yeah.
And yeah, we did. But we don't. Because there is choice. There's not. I'm not giving people a free rein just to act in response to what we do. But it isn't our fault. We are wired the way we're wired. We're here because we're here. And the recognition is so important. And what you have done, Charlie, is absolutely just like so manning up to this. And that's a terrible phrase, I know. But, you know, you've really stepped up to the plate. Not only did you eventually accept your fate and embrace that process to go through, but you've now stepped up and gone, do you know what, everybody, look, hey, let's lay this stigma to one side. Let's talk. Let's be open. And you are an absolute champion for what you've done. But it's not your fault. It's not our gig to own. Yeah. Some things, the way that we wired, you are making the very best of what you've lived through. And God bless your family and all that sail in them in that respect. Just it is a fantastic thing that's happened today. And I'm thrilled, and I know a lot of people will have benefited from this. I don't really know how to end this. I just, you know, kind of think we just carry on chatting. But if you had one final thought, what would it be, Charlie?
I think for me, that, like you say, John, that is it's not your fault. It's a tough thing to take through. You're right. It isn't.
It's not.
And you know, if you're playing football and someone does a slide tackle and knackers your ankle for 6 months, you're on the bench. And, you know, if you're ill with depression, you're just on the bench. You're going to get back. You're going to play again.
Yes.
Yes.
You're going to play again.
That's a great phrase. I love that. Yeah. Like that.
That's got to be the title of this podcast. You're going to play again.
Like it.
Beautiful. Charlie Gilbert, thank you so much. And to Field Dynamics for their support in your mental health journey.
Yeah, fantastic.
Big credit to them. Big credit to your lovely wife and your wonderful kids, your good friends, your sister-in-law's mother. Does that mean your mother-in-law? Or is that a...
No, other side. Yeah.
Oh, okay, right. I was confused there.
Yeah.
But... you know, credit to the people around you. And if you're listening to this and you don't have people around you, we can be your people. We reach out to us. I know Charlie would happily hear from you, John and I, definitely the guys in the EV Cafe. It's important. Don't leave this hidden.
Hmm.
Let it come out into the open. Even if it's an early stage, you're not sure. Do you want to talk it through? Look, and if all else fails, there is the Samaritans, and we give the, you know, when we say, oh, just phone the Samaritans, you'll be fine. I know people that answer those calls, and I know people that make a difference, whether you're young or whether you're old. You can reach out to somebody and get help in the moment, but then get steered and pointed in the right direction to get help over a longer period of time. Because as Charlie said there, it's not just about the moment or 3-hour-long sessions with a counsellor. This is about a structured support that will help you through what can be an utterly debilitating illness that is not your fault. So, and on that thought, we're going to get to play again. And we look forward to playing again in the near future with some other wonderful people. In the meantime, Charlie, thank you so much, mate. Really, really proud of you, if that's the right word.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Well done, buddy. Check out all the other podcasts on the EV Cafe. Many more with similar stories, but also a variety of people from across our industry. Come and check us out. Follow Field Dynamics. They're doing some great work in the van space, everybody. Check that out. And also the EV Cafe. Connect with us on LinkedIn and so on like that. But until the next time, have a great day, everybody. And I think Fraser Crane always used to say, happy mental health.
And I'm listening.
I'm listening too. Have a great day, everybody.